Welcome to The Human Beat. Today we're going to be talking with Karen Bain and Marcus Brown and talking all about acting, performing. Karen, good morning.
Good morning, Roger.
Marcus, good
morning.
Good morning. Good to see you. First of all, tell us a little bit about the class that you're going to be conducting in a few weeks.
Certainly. Well, registration has begun as of the 15th, and I believe there's only one spot left. But the classes will begin April 8th and 9th, and they will commence on Mondays and Tuesdays. And they will go for 6 weeks, and they will finish up as a showcase. And the showcase will be a bunch of stellar actors performing monologues and scenes and whatnot. And the cost of the class is $85. And let's see what else? Oh, it's an intensive, so it's and Karen will go over that, I'm sure.
But
it's,
where will the classes be conducted?
They will predominantly be at the Astor Street Opry Company, but the first two nights will be at the Star of the Sea, because the Lewis and Clark show at the Opry Company will be in its Tech Week. So. For some reason, they won't let us have their stage. I don't know why.
Well, when you talk about a showcase, does this mean that the people who take the class are going to get a chance to then perform in front of an audience?
Yes, absolutely. The skills and material that Karen's going to coach us and direct us and teach with, we're going to perform some of it in a showcase.
The showcases have been very popular. They show a wide range of dramatic literature, and there's something magic that happens in the class where people are risking and opening up and learning things in a new way, which creates a really beautiful kind of energy. So they're really fun to watch.
Well, it was fun to watch you perform, which I've gotten to do several times, so obviously you know how to act. And where did that come from? Where did you learn? How did that start with you?
Well, I've been in theater for a long time. I wrote and directed my first play in the fifth grade. I did some acting in community theater, and then I got into it in college. And after graduating with a degree in communications from Oregon State, I went to the University of Oregon and studied directing with an emphasis in actor training. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up along the way. I've studied it pretty hard. And teaching it reminds you all the time about going back to the basics.
Mm-hmm. Well, the basic question is, how do you teach someone to act? It's not like teaching someone how to change a tire or something like that. It's not that defined. So give us a hint as to how you go about that.
Well, you start with learning about the literature that you're performing. You do a character analysis. You teach people how to plumb from the script what they need to perform. You also do a lot of different kinds of exercise. We'll be doing a lot of different kinds of exercises that illustrate certain points. But mostly, you try and teach people how to step into a character instead of trying to create a character on the outside. We create the circumstances of a character and step in the middle of it.
Well, from your experience, can anyone learn to act, or are there some of us who are just not going to ever get there?
You should come take the class, Roger.
I should, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone can learn to act. I don't think everyone is going to be great at it.
Yeah.
It takes imagination, a tremendous amount of courage, and a big dose of empathy and charm always helps to be a really fine actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you watch people learning at first, what are some of the most common mistakes that they make on stage as they're trying to learn how to do what they do?
One of the mistakes is just saying the words and waiting for the other person to finish their words so you can say your words again.
Yes.
Not delving into character. But there's a lot of little things. Like, there are actors who like to touch things. They feel more comfortable if they're touching the chair and touching the table and touching the end table. And there's always, we talked about this, the shifting feet, not standing tall. Also, one of the things that is a habit on stage is people like to, when they're angry or trying to be powerful, they like to bend over at the waist so they can really reach in, which completely weakens the body and the image. So there's lots of little things.
And a lot of those things are born of nervousness, out of nerves and trying to deal with the nerves. But you can use that anxiety. I mean, everybody gets nervous before a performance, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyone who doesn't that you've ever encountered?
I have met some. and they amaze me. I get really nervous.
We've all heard the story about, some noted Broadway actresses who, would throw up before every performance. Because, but it can give you energy as well.
Absolutely.
And so you just need to learn how to harness that so you're not doing the wrong thing.
Absolutely, and that comes from the training and learning how to play an objective. You're always playing an objective on stage. There's something that you want, and you're trying to get something. And the more you play your objective, the deeper you are into the play, and the less likely you are trying to figure out whether to put your hands in your pockets or not.
Focus.
When you direct a play, do you try to do your blocking early so people can tie dialogue in with action, or is that something you do later on, or what's your preference?
I do two different ways. I do blocking early.
Blocking, by the way, is the movement, how actors move around the stage.
Right, creating
the director
stage
telling,
pictures. Right. We do that early, so partly so people can be memorizing their lines and connecting it to the blocking. Partly we get that framework set up so we can build underneath it. But lately, when I've been working at the Coaster, I've had them memorize beforehand, which is harder to do,
It
gives us a more compact rehearsal period.
Can you define what makes a really good actor in your mind? What is it that makes somebody really outstanding as an actor?
Well, I think, like I said, empathy is a huge element of it. You have to be able to put yourself in someone's shoes. You have to be able to understand the human condition and what it's like to go through things. Actors are very courageous. Good actors are courageous because in good acting, you're living it on the stage. So if you are playing a parent who loses a child, you lose that child every night. You live those emotions every night, and it takes a great deal of courage to be willing to go there and to show that kind of vulnerability to other people. So I think that charm always helps.
Well, another issue is you may not like the character you're playing.
Yeah, you have to.
Maybe
you have to find a way.
Maybe playing a nasty person, but so you have to find a way to understand that
right.
character and what makes them like they are.
And when you do, it's usually really fun.
Yes.
Now, there are different techniques that actors swear to, and you're going to be using one particular technique that I read in this.
The Stanislavski technique.
Yeah, can you tell us about that and what that is?
Well, Stanislavski was a Russian, brilliant Russian actor, teacher, director, and he helped start the Moscow Art Theater. He was born in 63 and he died in 1863 and died in 1938. And he was to acting what Darwin was to biological sciences and Freud was to psychology. He codified a system that allowed for truth and technique. So it's very important learning the technical aspects of theater, where you're going, how to cross to the chair, how to make a turn, dance, vocal work. All those elements and technical elements are very important. And at that time, most of the acting was full of bravado and there wasn't a lot of truth in it. Mm-hmm. And he started working with Chekhov and Gorky. He needed a more truthful style of acting. And so he created this system and this system to be able to teach it. And it's very simple. It makes sense when you read it, you think, of course, but there wasn't a system like that when he was creating it.
Mm-hmm. I think we've all seen older, even older movies where the style of acting is so much different and everything's sort of overblown and overdone and unreal. And this was a technique to bring things back into sort of a portraying reality, was it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there other sort of famous techniques that are taught as well? Are you familiar?
Probably the biggest right now is the Suzuki system, and that was created by a Japanese man who studied Japanese no theater and the Kabuki theater. So it's very physically oriented, very technically oriented, and there's a relationship between actor and the earth that's very important. It's I haven't trained with him, so I'm not exactly sure of the elements. And then Anne Bogart does a style of theater called Viewpoints, which is also very physical and is gestural related, and it started from a dance exercise, a dance theory, that she adapted into theater.
probably the thing everybody's heard about is method acting.
Method acting.
What is that?
Method acting tends to be very emotional. It can be very self-indulgent. Stanislavski came up with using memory in a rehearsal exercise as a way of, like, you're dealing with the death of someone, and you've never had anybody in your life die, so you think about when your pet died and how sad you were then, and you use that feeling in the scene, and you associate it that way. Well, Stanislavski didn't intend for that to be a performance exercise, but in the method, there is emphasis on that memory and using images to recall emotion in the middle of performance. And sometimes characterization can be lost in that process. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the discipline and focus can be lost in that process. Mm-hmm. So it's a piece of the Stanislavski system.
Well, what are some of the, Marcus, what are some of the opportunities for actors in this area? I think, part of the result from this class might be that there would be more trained actors who have some skills, who are available to perform in productions around town. What are some of the things that people can do here?
Well, there are a lot of things to do as an actor. I'm probably not the best one to speak on the matter, as I kind of live and hide in my own home at the Astor Street Opera House. But
in fact, you're sort of Karen's champion and sponsor on this. You wanted her to do this class.
Right. Well, right. Karen is I'm a director, actor myself, and a budding director at that. But I'm doing it the hard way. I'm coming up through the theater and learning on my own, and also taking these classes. And I have what I call my quorum, which is about a half a dozen super duper awesome directors, and Karen is the top of the list, and so in that relationship it allows me to get some one-on-one training, if you will, that I may have gotten at the university or college level that I foregoed on. Mm-hmm. But as far as opportunities, there's a lot of opportunities. We have the Astor Street Opera Company that produces, like 7 or 8 shows a year. Mm-hmm. And they vary from crazy, wacky melodrama to much more serious production, such as the fall production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And
right.
We just closed the original one-act showcase, and it had some dramatic fare in there.
Yeah, Astor Street Opera Company is not just about melodrama
anymore.
No.
But we, for 3 years now, we've been developing a more and more edgy, dramatic fare for our audience members, and it's coming along quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just the most appropriate step. We have a lot of actors that would like to take a deeper, more meaningful lesson and acting, and this is going to be their vehicle for doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, most of us are familiar with Cannon Beach. Mm-hmm. And the Coaster Theater down there. Mm-hmm. And there's also some fine things being done across the river. Mm-hmm. On the peninsula. They did a wonderful production of a really difficult show. They did Into the Woods not too long ago.
Oh, did they? Mm-hmm.
And did it well. And so I'm kind of amazed at times in a small area like we have that there are some pretty darn talented people here who
are
able to pull off some tough things. But
yes.
There's also the Liberty Theater is starting to produce theater, and Sen and Cavo has been doing the directing there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have Spoon River Anthology up right now.
So that's really kind of exciting. And I think once people try it and they get bitten by the bug and find out how much fun it is and how you develop this family with the cast and the show that you're in, that it's hard not to do it again.
When you succeed, it is unbelievably awesome.
And if you're not succeeding, it's excruciating.
It is horrific.
Well, and sometimes in some shows, you're not succeeding right until the 11th hour.
Closing night.
Hopefully not good. But sometimes, the show can be ready to open the next day or two mm-hmm. days away, and you still mm-hmm. have people who haven't quite mastered their lines and mm-hmm. so on. And just,
oh, yeah.
It can be crazy making. Now, you're starting to direct now, mm-hmm. Marcus. How is that been?
It's been my favoriteest thing to do, to direct a group of people and to help contain and develop and to bring live performing arts onto a stage is almost nothing better for me.
Well, maybe both of you could talk about sort of the interplay and responsibility between the director and the actors. I mean, part of the director's responsibility is to make sure that the actors are getting a fair opportunity to do a good job, that you're helping them be good.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, one of my favorite things that rattles around my pea brain that I learned from Karen is that the director is the actor's voice. And I think that all the time because it helps keep me in their frame of mind. And it also keeps me hyper aware that if without me, they're not going to have any idea what's going on. So I have to speak the truth so that it can appear on stage.
The director's a voice of the play and the creator of the event. It's the like the prism. All the different colors come together and create white light, and the director has to make those decisions and be that prism. I believe that the director is not God. There's a whole style of theater where the director is God and very authoritarian, but I believe that it's my job to serve the script, to serve the actors and the designers. It's my job to help them do the best that they can possibly do and give them all the tools they need to do that.
Well, you mentioned the designers, and a director has responsibility for more than the actors and so on, but you also have to be concerned about sets, costumes, and so on, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and ideally all those things are created together. You have production meetings and you present the play and your vision of the play and where you're going with it, and then you get these very talented people who say, oh, you know, what about a multi-level unit set, you know, and the idea there in collaboration is that you get better ideas together than you would by yourself. If I came in and said, this is the play I'm doing, this is how I'm going to direct it, it would be so much more limited than if I take this group of people and this script and these designers and create this atmosphere where everybody gets to create, and and you get so much better of a product when you're working that way. And it's all about the love.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Marcus, tell me how things work at Esther Street Opry Company. Do you have kind of a regular crew that does the set design and a regular crew that does costumes, or are these different people shows?
We kind of share the bounty at the Esther Street Opry Company. We have several people that can design sets, build sets, paint sets, and we have several people that can operate the lights and sound and run the tech of each production. But yes, there is a core group that tends to take on each of the major productions. But the Astor Street Opry Company does three major melodrama shows, and all three of them share the same set format.
Right.
So it doesn't take a designer once you've done the show 28 years long. Now it's just, oh yeah, that flat goes over there and that flat goes over there. Right. But
for things like Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, the Cuckoo's Nest I designed and Tom Brownson and I constructed that along with help from Mick Alderman in painting. And Mick designed the lighting for that. And it was his Mick Alderman, a local filmmaker and director, and he's brilliant. He helped make that show what it was, without a doubt. And collaborating with him was extremely rewarding because I didn't have to babysit him at all. I met with him and he's all like, yeah, I'll see you when you have your blocking laid out and you start doing runs. And sure enough, he came in and watched the show a few times, and then he was busily manipulating the lights and focusing and coming up with ideas. And I told him where there was a couple of emotional hot spots I wanted to make sure that came out, and boy, he brought it. It was marvelous. I didn't have to hardly change anything. And
well, how do you go about structuring a show when you did that, or when you do a show? How do rehearsals go? What do you do? How does it begin?
Well, there really is a formula that I use, and it's I'm sure every director comes about their own formula based on their experience. But you get a script and you read it, and you do what we call an analysis, and we break the script down and we decide whether it would sell to the audience that we normally cater to, and then you start thinking about the message, and you start thinking about the difficulty of the set and the props and costumes, and then once you decide, yeah, this is doable for our theater company, then you break it down even further into, well, who do we need, and setting up a rehearsal schedule, and then you have to make 5,000 phone calls to try to get Mick Alderman to come and play, or, sure, or other individuals to come and help collaborate in the form. And it's an enormous partaking. I mean, it is exhausting, actually, in the beginning, because I start my analysis on my script probably 6 months before auditions.
Right.
So I live, eat, drink, and sleep as much as I can in that world, so that when it's up and running, I'm like the master of all.
Yeah.
But which never works out, because as Karen says, to collaborate is the greatest reward. You people that are involved in theater are so eclectic, eccentric. They're so unique. They're all unique people. I never meet the same person ever. And if you allow for that quality to come into your show, and you allow them to kind of grow in their role and bring their magic, it's much better.
Well, you say exhausting, but as you say, you have a smile on your face, and you mentioned early on that it's one of the best things you've ever done.
Well, it's the closest thing to being a human being you'll ever experience when you are toiling with a group of people on stage to try to understand what the playwright had intended, and then to try to flesh out the characters and to make thing that all work. It's very, very, very intense. And there's a, I don't know if you'd call it lore, but, or metaphor in theater, that as a director, you birth your show like a child. And it, because of all the work and labor and love and attention it needs, when it gets up on its feet and starts running, as in when it shows, it's just beautiful, and it grows through that 3 or 4 week run. And then when it's over with, it can be really traumatic, as I experienced with Cuckoo's Nest. It really took my breath away. I didn't want it to end, and the cast didn't want it to end. And we didn't even want to say strike around one another, because it came together really well. The universe blessed us with the right people and the right energy and the right timing, and it doesn't always happen that way.
You might mention what a strike is, because somebody who hasn't been in theater might think you're talking about a work stoppage.
Yeah, well, I guess if we started paying them. No, a strike is a theater term for taking down a set, or taking down
the end of the show when the set has
the end of the show.
Everybody turns down and helps out with
it. It's a real ritual too, because again, the birth metaphor, you build this whole show up, and in the end, to have a group of people tear it down is almost like kind of like a funeral. You know, you all share in it going away, and that's important too.
Well, the end of a show is always bittersweet too, where you've been working real hard, and
you
like getting your time back, but you're also, the family's breaking up.
Right.
Well, you mentioned actors and how interesting actors are, and one thing I found interesting over the years is how people who in person may be very shy and very pulled back and very retiring can be so different on stage.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm reminded of one person who had a really difficult stuttering problem in his personal life. And on stage, there was nothing. No evidence of that whatsoever. And I think it's getting into someone else's skin, maybe, that is enables you to do that.
When you take on that character, it can be extremely rewarding. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really become somebody else, so that the humanity really comes out. And I think the only time you're alive is when you're doing that, because you're really, you know, you're in a very truthful moment.
Let's talk about auditions a little bit. The very best thing an actor can do to get ready for auditions, obviously, is to take Karen's class.
I agree.
What do you like to see from an actor when they come to audition?
The first thing I think that would help is if you read the play. Then you have an idea who the characters are and what you're doing. Most of the auditions around here, they do what they call cold reading, which means they hand you a script and you go up and you read it. When I'm auditioning, I like to hand people pieces of scripts and have them go out and read it together, kind of get used to it, and then come in and read it in front of me.
I've asked Karen on more than one occasion, you know, how does one go about going in and auditioning? And as a director, what are you really looking for? You know, because I have my own little way of looking at it. And I... you know, it's really about energy for me as a director. I want to see somebody up there smiling and happy and really excited to be there, you know, mm-hmm. and that's a huge component. And then you start breaking it down. Well, can they focus? Can they remember a simple direction? And there's little things that I'm learning to do more often in auditions other than just reading dialogue out of the script, because, you know, as Karen has taught me, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be able to pay attention, or they're going to be able to work with others, or they're going to have the right energy with one another. So there's all this dynamic to it. But
I want to know who you are when you come into the stage. I want to know who you are and what you can bring to the process. And I often do exercises that are group exercises, and I watch like small groups create a performance and then they perform. And for me, I go around and I watch the people that participate and the ones that don't participate and the ones that are bossy and the ones that come up with great ideas. So the performance itself is less valuable to me than watching people work together. And the more I know, the more you can be who you are and less nervous and more person, the better I like it and the more chance I have to be able to decide if I want to work with you or not. Mm-hmm. And if I think that you will be able to relate to these characters.
Mm-hmm. What about matchups? You want to talk about that a little bit, about how sometimes you may have somebody who just is doing a great job for this part and someone else is doing a great job for this part, but he's 7 feet tall and she's 3 feet nine, and you don't want to cast the two of them together mm-hmm. because it would distract.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sort of unconventional in that way. Mm-hmm. I'll cast a taller leading lady. For me, it's about the spirit of the piece and making the spirit of the play live. And like I did Private Lives, and the woman and man, the main characters, are beautiful and sophisticated. And I cast a large woman as this woman. And I had students that had to see the play. And at first they would write, you know, they talked about how beautiful she was. And then she came out and she was a big woman. And I didn't think that fit. And then by the end of the paper, they were saying, but she was so beautiful, yeah. you know, and she yeah. knew who she was. And she presented that. And she was the, out of all the auditioners, she was the one who understood her own beauty, who knew how to live that role.
There are probably lessons there for all of us in how we live our everyday lives and where the beauty comes from and so on. Well, let's go back to the class a little bit. Again, the dates of the class are?
Well, the class begins April 8th and 9th, and the first class will be at the Star of the Sea School beginning at 6:30 p.m. And then from there on forward, every Monday and Tuesday. And then we showcase in the end of May, I believe the 25th and 26th?
17th and 18th.
17th and 18th, it came back a week. There's been a little change in schedule. But 17th and the 18th, Friday and a Saturday night, the Astor Street Opera Company will showcase the actors and the material that they have learned and worked for 6 weeks.
Well, it's been fun talking to you, Marcus Brown and Karen Bain. Thanks very much. And thank you for listening. This has been The Human Beat, and we invite you to join us again next month.